This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. The 2015 Reserve Pinot Noir will be released very soon. Less than 80 cases produced. Its fruit represents the best of the best of Unsworth Pinot. Details at unsworthvineyards.com.
It's a new day, my friends. It's Tasting Room Radio. I'm Jerry David Mulligan, and we are at the 40th annual Vancouver International Wine Festival. This is our 10th year with Dana Van Mulligan, the wine diva, sitting in, of course, as the co-host. We're going to be joined later on in the show by Sandra Oldfield, who's off wandering around and tasting. Dana, have you had a chance to taste yet, or have I kept you busy?
You have kept me busy.
I walked
into the room and sat down
beside you. I'm so sorry. But we do have at the table DJ Kearney from newdistrict.ca.
Hello,
Deej. Christine Coletta, the co-owner of Okanagan Crush Pad and the leader behind the Haywire and Narrative Wines.
Hello.
By the way, in between them is the late arriving but fresh as a daisy, Galen Barnhart, the winemaker at Monte Creek in Kamloops. Of course you can't. Just speak into the microphone. Just say hello.
Afternoon.
Thank you. Afternoon. And Chris Turek from Unsworth. I was going to give you the... I was going to call you the brand ambassador, but that you're the family. So what's your official title?
Well, recently I've been pruning the vineyard and pulling the brush out and getting on the tractor. My day-to-day role is doing sales here in Vancouver, but also being a sounding board for our winemaking staff and restaurant staff.
And what did you bring to pour on the table?
Our 2016 Rosé and our non-vintage Charme de Lille sparkling.
The Charme is a runaway hit for you guys.
And we've created a monster.
And you're making more of?
We make as much as we can. We'll do about 1,200 cases this year, and a little bit of Rosé as well under the Charme label.
And Christine Coletta, what is this gorgeous white wine that you brought?
I brought a Sauvignon Blanc from our Haywire lineup. And it's from the Waters and Banks Vineyard, which is in Summerland.
That's what I was going to ask you. What, distinctive, what's the slope? Is it a new planting?
No, it's about 2006, and it's a lovely little vineyard that has Sauvignon Blanc and Pinot Noir, a little bit of Merlot, influenced by Trout Creek Canyon. And it's just a gorgeous little spot. It's one of Pedro Pera's favorite sites. Pedro is our Chilean soil engineer and consultant, and he absolutely loves his vineyard.
That's a great name for a vineyard, too.
Actually, it was really interesting because they had all sorts of names that they were floating around, but the last name of the two people that own it, no, it's great, is Waters and Banks. So it's a beautiful name.
Sounds like a law firm.
It does, actually, yes. I'll have to keep that in mind if I run into trouble with them.
It's so good, Chris. It's just smashable, but it's very serious. It's
we've been
so
making
precise.
Wine from this vineyard the Sauvignon Blanc since 2013. And so I found that wine was quite rustic in comparison to what we've got now. And I think it's just Matt Dumain, our winemaker, who's a Kiwi, finding his way with Sauvignon Blanc.
Finding his stride, yes.
In the
Okanagan. Galen Barnhart, the winemaker at Monte Creek, as they like to quote-unquote call that region the emerging region. How long do you want to be the emerging region, and how long do you want to just lead?
It's interesting. I think there's a few emerging regions in British Columbia, but I think at some point we will be getting the Thompson Valley designation, and
that would help.
Yeah, I really feel like that's going to give us an identity and help us to establish that terroir.
I wondered what you were going to bring to pour. You brought the Riesling.
I did. Yeah, I brought our 2016 Riesling. So this is it's actually a mix of South Thompson and Okanagan fruit, but. For me, this is a variety that I think has got a very bright future in the South Thompson.
Okay, I'm going to open this up. Here's one of the first questions I wanted to ask the whole table. Farm Friends was a big success, right, Christine?
Yes, it was really wonderful. It was a sold-out event, and we, as you know, we put it together really quickly.
Yeah.
Great evening.
And it was basically it was our response to the Alberta Wine Ban.
Well, it was a tiny response to the other.
Okay.
I think there were other people like the BC Wine Institute and the government of British Columbia that maybe had a more profound impact than our event.
Well, more legal heft, but yours was the delicious part of it.
Yeah, and ours was from the heart, and it was from producers, and
it was kind. One
way that we thought we could contribute to the cause.
So, Dana, and for the whole of the table, this is the first real gathering of the wine industry since the Alberta Wine Ban. What comments are you hearing? Is it behind us now, or is there a shadow over us saying, if this goes wrong again, we're going to come back and ban those? What's going on?
I am the wrong person to ask.
Well, you were away.
I was sick with that H3N2 for 2 weeks, which I was completely unplugged. Then I was in Napa, so I am really unplugged from everything.
But have you heard anything that you want to add to it?
I just heard that that BC blinked. That's what I
heard. Well, that was from their side of the Rockies. How about you, Deej?
I think it's important to be aware that this might not be over. And if there's ever a time for British Columbia wine lovers to step up and start supporting wholeheartedly all through the summer, this is the time. It may not be over.
Kayla?
You know, it's funny. I can't count the number of times that I've seen posts on Facebook of both friends in BC and Alberta saying that they're going to drink twice as much in support of this. So ultimately, you know, I hope that it's over. But otherwise, it could be a net positive. Who knows?
Christine, you're right in the middle of it. What do you think?
Well, I'm keen to see what happens this coming spring when Albertans typically start visiting the Okanagan.
Exactly.
I sure hope they come back. We love having them. In the last couple of years, it's been a little lighter traffic there due to their economy, mm-hmm. and we're all counting on them coming back.
Chris Turek, what was the buzz in the college?
Well, I was speaking with the director of transportation a couple of weeks ago, and they said they're going to reinitiate the idea of putting a bridge in to the island. And if they do that, I think I have to be a proponent of banning Okanagan wine from Vancouver Island. I think that's probably the most reasonable course of action. Yeah, no, I mean, it affected the people that shouldn't have been affected. The importers
Correct.
In Alberta, the retailers in Alberta, the restaurants in Alberta. I mean, it
was awkward.
Pretty typical
It was
politics.
Awkward because we had a lot of friends there. Those Albertans are running a third of the wine, you know. Jeez, it's crazy.
I only heard from private retailers that basically said this is ridiculous, and they were going public and saying so. They needed to get the wine.
I do have a question for you, Dana Van Mulligan, our co-host. Thank you. What do you think that was the effect of last year's showcase of BC Wines? Did it show itself, do you think, in the restaurants and the consumers?
Oh, I think so. I mean, I've certainly seen it happening in restaurants, and definitely, I mean, we always loved our own wine. That was never a question. I think it was just getting to know the wines better and getting to know the regions a little bit better and getting the opportunity to talk to the winemakers and the producers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
By the way, I go back to Chris. Is there a rosé version of that Chardonnay?
There is. It's still a base wine, so no bubbles in it yet, but okay. it's destined for the pressurized tank and a little referment for a spring release or summer release.
Is there a Timbuktu bubble?
There is available a Blanc and a Rosé.
Is the Reserve Pinot in there?
The Reserve Pinot is somewhere under the table for the trade, yeah.
Christine Coletta, you're pouring from Haywire. You got Pink Bub in the room?
I don't have Pink Bub. I have regular, boring, old, plain Bub.
Nothing boring.
Said no one ever.
Nothing boring. It's so Bub.
It is very Bub. It is 50% Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. And the vintage that we're pouring today is a 15. And this is the tail end of that. We're going to be switching into the next vintage any day now.
DJ Kearney, your impressions. Did you taste the room? Have you had a chance?
I've been just in the Portuguese and Spanish section.
Okay.
That's what I'm doing. There are some stunning whites. Oh, whites from Portugal. Rinto, Encruzado, Nureiro. It just goes on and on. So that's what I would encourage people to do. But a wine that I hope you're pouring is your Pinot.
Yes.
I think one of the
She
great
said, turning to Galen on radio.
Exactly. So Monte Creek Pinot Noir Reserve. Do you have the 16 still, the 2016?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
So a Platinum Award winner. I was one of the judges tasting it thinking, what the hell is this? It's so good. I can't place it. And well done. Your wines are so, so lovely at Monte Creek Ranch. I drive past it going to Shuswap every summer. And you're just in the middle of nowhere. It's so unexpected.
And a great place to have lunch.
And it's so handsome.
Yeah, no, it's good. So you're sitting beside
Can you blush on the radio?
You are sitting beside, you know, big Pinot chops in Haywire.
Absolutely.
And I know Chris will enjoy tasting yours if she hasn't already.
I'll be right over.
Yeah, there you go. And then there's you.
Featherweight Pinot.
What's the best thing about making wine on Vancouver Island?
Well, you can actually get the grapes off the vine. We're cool. We're wet. I've said up until the past few years that when we can make red wine out of Pinot Noir, that's a vintage year. And it used to be kind of 3 years out of 10. And now, I mean, hey, we've made every year since 2012 a red Pinot. So, you know, le bon problème, perhaps. But that's for us. Pinot is always the luxury, the vintage.
The gravy. Yeah.
I want to go back, if I can, to Galen at Monte Creek for a second. The Hands Up Red, you're pouring it today? The Hands Up Red?
Not pouring it today. No, we've got our Reserve Cab, some Chards, some Pinot, some Riesling, and some Rosé.
Hands Up White? No?
No. We brought a new selection for you to try.
So. Okay, fine.
Is there Marquette in the Rosé?
Yeah, it's 100% Marquette, actually. So,
100%.
Yeah, I'll be over.
All right. Thank you for doing this, and thank you for guesting on the show. Christine Coletta, anything else you want to add?
No, I'm just thrilled to be here. Always a beautiful day. Isn't it amazing how the weather in Vancouver cooperates every year for this festival?
Because it was pouring up. Well, I landed at 10. It was wicked. It was embarrassingly cold and wet.
I just love being here. This is my 30th Wine Festival, Vancouver Wine Festival.
Wow. Congratulations.
3-0.
Wow.
And considering that I'm 45, that's pretty
darn good. Impressive, because you weren't even legal.
I've never been legal.
Listen to this, guys. Come as good as this table was, well, I'm just saying. Coming up next, Bruce Ewart from Lagadi, all the way from Nova Scotia.
Oh, wow.
Howard Soon, John Skinner in the same room. Nikki Calloway and Curtis Colt and Sandra Ofield are all going to be setting in.
Blue Chip,
thank you so much for doing this. Have yourself a great Van Winefest year 40, okay? Thank you, Galen.
Thank you.
Thanks, bud.
Thank you, TDM.
Thanks, Terry.
This is Tasting Room Radio, year 10.
Woo. All right. Well done, Terry. That was good.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. The 2015 Reserve Pinot Noir will be released very soon. Less than 80 cases produced. Its fruit represents the best of the best of Unsworth Pinot. Details at unsworthvineyards.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Road 13. Celebrating their ranking as the 2017 National Wine Awards of Canada number one winery in BC. They invite you to visit them on Oliver's coveted Golden Mile Bench. Road 13, it's all about the dirt. Welcome back. This is the 10th version of the Tasting Room Radio Show at the 40th Annual Vancouver International Wine Festival. And we have some friends at the table. This is so good. This is BC and Nova Scotia. Well, listen, it's two coasts, long-distance friends, so to speak. Bruce Ewart has joined us from Lacadie Vineyards in that gorgeous Gasparilla Valley, just outside of Wolfville, Nova Scotia, the co-owner and the winemaker. Welcome back, Bruce.
Thanks for inviting me.
I have Howard Soon, who I had down for 37 vintages, and you wrote me a note saying 38.
38th year.
Okay,
yeah.
Fine. All right, fine. Not pouring Vanessa, but the reason why I asked you here, Howard, is because you have opinions and views and things.
And that usually gets me into trouble.
Usually gets me into trouble.
That's right.
John Skinner is here.
I don't have any opinions or views.
No, of course.
Oh, really?
From Painted Rock, Curtis Colt is here from the Georgia Strait and Top Drop Vancouver. Curtis,
hi.
I saw you work in the room.
That's what I do.
You have a lot of friends here.
Yeah. Well, a lot of time I'm the guy pouring wine, so you get a lot of friends that way. I think everyone around the table knows that.
I have the wonderful winemaker from Quails Gate, Nikki Calloway, is with me. Welcome.
Thank you.
And my co-host, Sandra Ofield, is right here beside me. Did you taste around the room? Because you've been gone for a while.
I did. I tasted a bunch of old bush vines from Spain. I got into a little rut.
And
it was
how
only
was the
bush vines, only old and only red.
Did you taste your way out of the rut?
Yeah, then I kind of kicked into Italy a little bit into BC. It was nice.
Okay.
It was relaxing.
The last group, Bruce, this is interesting because I talked to you about this. The last group that was here, BC Wine Friends of ours, we talked about, because this is the first real big gathering since the ban on BC wine, and I'm kind of wondering what is the lingering after effect of this. It's recent news. It's still in the, we're still talking about it. What's the feeling in the room? Nikki?
I'm just happy that our wines are now available in every province again and everybody's able to consume what they want to consume. That's about all I have to say.
Were you concerned?
I think there was some concern, yeah, for sure. I mean, Alberta is a pretty big market for most BC wineries.
No, and John?
The greatest irony is that we got a call from our agent shortly after the whole thing was announced. Not that it was over, but that it started. And they said, oh, there was a run on the wine down at the AGLC, and we're all just sold out. So actually, if they do that once a month, we'd kind of be pretty good. We'll move some product.
It's kind of a tender trap.
It's really good that it's behind us because we don't want to be in a fight with anybody. Honestly, we've really worked hard to establish good and reliable relationships. And you know, it was a compliment that they thought they should focus on or even involve the BC wine industry, that we are profile enough that they thought it was worthy, you know? So let's put it behind us.
Bruce, how did it play in Wolfville?
Well, of course, in our province, we have a whole million people in our one province on the edge of the Atlantic. So having access, consumers to have access to our wines right across Canada is very important. And so I think the issue brought to the foreground the issue of direct-to-consumer purchasing, which is a good thing, to get that conversation fresh, alive again.
And Curtis, I know that you followed the story.
Yeah, of course. I think that it in some way benefited us. It got people talking. You know, awareness is the only way that we're going to be able to open up shipping across Canada of all of our wines. And the fact that even the lingo that they were saying, that they were stopping the importation of British Columbian wine into Alberta, the absurdity that it's actually something that is imported, not just brought in.
Sandra Ofield.
Yeah, I mean, we're wine. We're not a weapon. I thought I was pretty offended by it initially because when should wine be used like a weapon? I just thought the whole thing was very odd. I know it raised the profile of BC Wines and DTC, but you know, I think we haven't really thought about some of the longer term implications. Might be that some wineries that were wanting to go into Alberta may now choose not to, and I think that's a problem. I think access across the country is important.
Howard Soon.
Well, first, I have two minds, Terry. First of all,
yes,
Albertans love our wine. So it's hard that they would, you know, not be able to get it. But I don't think it lasted that long. To me, it's like putting a load of laundry in the dryer, in the wash machine, and the dryer is done. Your laundry's done. It didn't seem to be that long. My other mind is saying that if people got mad about it in BC or Alberta, wine producers and all that, that's a good thing because that means we cared enough. And that we didn't have that before. 10 years ago, 20 years ago, nobody cared. Wine, so what?
Yeah. All right, let me do this because I love doing this. I'm going to ask you what's in front of you, Nikki, but I have another special, very special, maybe the best question of the entire year right here for me in a second. But first, what did you bring from the Quails Gate portfolio?
I brought a Chardonnay, Rosemary's Block Chard.
How many different Chardonnays are you making?
We now make 3 Chardonnays.
Okay. And where is this in the tier? Is this the top end?
This is one of the top, and this is one of my favorites.
And how many other different wines are you pouring at the show?
Here? I think we're pouring close to six wines, I believe, during the show.
Wow. Do you want my question now? Can I give you the question?
Sure, go for it.
Okay. I even wrote it down. It says, on average, vines, you all have different opinions, but vines take anywhere from 7 to 8 to 10 to 12 years to finally realize who they are, where their roots are going, and what kind of character they're going to give you, right? How long does it take a winemaker to realize what she's going to do when she goes to a new winery?
Well, I'm 35, and I have no bloody clue what the hell I'm supposed to be in my life, so there you go.
But how long have you been at Quails Gate?
I've been at Quails Gate for 5 years.
5 years. Are we getting a sense now of the winemaker that you want to be at Quails Gate? Can you express yourself?
I don't know if I'll ever feel as if I'm the winemaker I want to be. It's always a work in progress, and I'm my own worst enemy, so I'm never content 100% with what I'm doing. But
are you saying I'm getting
closer to certain wines, for sure.
You're saying a little hard on yourself, are you?
Probably, yeah. Yeah, I think most of us winemakers are, you know. Our wines are in everybody's homes, and consumers are enjoying them, and I just want to make sure it's a good representation of what I think I can do to that grape.
Can I tell you, I like your wines a lot.
Okay, yes, you
really
can. It makes me feel better. Thank you, sir.
Much.
I was kind of wondering, I mean, having Howard here as well with Nikki is, you know, at some point it seems like you less make the wines and you conform more to the year that you're given. And I got that way more and more. As the older I got, the more I realized I was powerless against
what I was given. Are you starting to feel that as well, Nikki?
Yeah, for sure.
You're guiding it, right? You're guiding your product into a great bottle of wine. You know, Nikki, I got to tell you that when you first started there, I was watching you. You know, I don't know if you knew that, but I keep an eye on young winemakers and how they're doing. And I maybe you're a little nervous when you first started, but I know I would say now you're hitting your stride. You're very comfortable. The people that work for you love you. I can tell you that. People in the winery love you. So you're doing a great job here. Right there. That's all.
Okay, stop the compliments. That's it. No more.
How'd you like my question? Bruce, you came a long way. You must like us. We must be an emerging customer for you.
Yes.
What did you bring to pour and why?
I brought vintage cuvée. I was told that you were going to be talking about global warming.
No.
I guess I was wrong, but I brought a blend of Lacadie Blanc and a little bit of Chardonnay, which shows maybe the signature and maybe the future. It's a blend. It's a traditional method, certified organic, bubbly.
How challenged were you when you left to Kelowna as that winemaker? How challenging was it to go to that region and discover its limitations and its enrichment?
We were the ninth winery in Nova Scotia and the first bubbly out there. And I had tasted Lacadie Blanc as still wines and saw the potential. There's a lot of acidity there. It's almost the Chasselas of Nova Scotia.
Okay.
If you think of Switzerland with that variety, and it makes a beautiful bubbly. So I enjoy working with it. For all the snow that we get and the cold weather, it's great.
John Skinner, Painted Rock, what'd you bring to pour and why?
I brought our 2015 Cab Franc, because it's Cab Franc is a variety that's really starting to, I mean, I've got to have my ears open. I'm on the international stage a ton. I've spent a lot of time in London recently, and I had a really interesting comment from Stephen Spurrier when I was there last year, and he just reviewed our Red Icon, and I thanked him at a dinner that he rated it 94 points, and he said, well, I'll tell you, John, I really like your Icon, but if you want to get on the international stage, bring this Cab Franc to London. Because, and I asked him why, and he said, well, if you think about it, Opus One kind of has your blend covered in California. You're being characterized or described as New World, so they have you covered with Opus One in California. Washington State kind of has your Syrah covered, but the Cab Franc, they don't have that bright acidity that you're able to achieve, and the London market love the bright acidity. They love this Cab Franc, so I'm pretty excited about it.
It's such a hot grape right now anyways, but yep. I just feel it's helped put BC on the map, and it hasn't come without its struggles, though. I mean, in the early days, it was hard to move that stuff, but now it's just such, it seems to fit
it's
the terroir so
wine.
Well here, yep. You know? Yep.
I recall Senator Oldfield years ago telling me how there were conversations way back in the day of not if, but when you were going to pull your Cabernet Franc, because it wasn't selling, and then all of a sudden, you couldn't keep up with demand, and I think that it's such a great variety for the region here in BC, and also because, like John says, it's not a common grape to see as a single varietal wine around the world, and it's so expressive here, and with our mineral-driven soils, the fresh acidity, the liveliness, the purity of fruit.
You know, the most interesting thing in our journey is we couldn't do a varietal Cab Franc for the first eight or nine vintages and had no interest, and it wasn't until the vines, because we planted everything from scratch in 2004, it wasn't until the vines had about 10 years that it was worthy of being a single varietal, and it just needed, the complexity just opened like a flower.
I love that grape. By the way, Curtis Cole, you once wrote a column about Howard Soon and his bowl of dirt.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
I do.
And then he became a box of dirt.
Yes.
And then a box of rocks. So
he was the first guy I knew in BC wine that was just, whenever you talked to him, he wasn't talking about the grapes, he wasn't talking about the wine, the brand, he was talking about the dirt. And when he came to Vancouver, taste the wines, the first thing that he did, you had to touch the dirt, smell it, and that's what we're all talking about now in the world of wine.
Thank you, Howie.
Gotta live it.
Thank you all. I knew this was going to be fun. John Skinner, Nikki Callaway from Quail's Gate, from Lacadie Vineyards, all the way from Nova Scotia, the one and only Bruce Ewart, Howard Soon, master winemaker, Vanessa, and Sandra Oldfield. You going to stick around?
I am. I'm staying.
Excellent, because we have some troublemakers in the next group. This is Tasting Room Radio. I'm Trevor David Mulligan.
Thanks, Tidium.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Road 13, family-owned and operated since 2003. Road 13 Vineyards is proud to produce a selection of some of British Columbia's most celebrated wines. Get them delivered to your door by joining their wine club at road13vineyards.com. The segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by NewDistrict.ca. Do you wish wine would just show up at your door? The Wine Club by NewDistrict.ca provides you with monthly deliveries of exciting and authentic wines, all selected by hometown wine pro DJ Kearney. Details at NewDistrict.ca.
Tasting Room Radio at the 40th Annual Vancouver International Wine Festival. I have two co-hosts, I have Dana Van Mulligan and Sandra Oldfield. And I need all the help I can get because we have all-stars at the table. Calla Bischoff is here representing Selene Estates in New Zealand, Hawke's Bay, and others. We also have James Robertson, the global wine ambassador and manager, actually, because always can speak about the wines of New Zealand and himself. Hello.
It's good to be back.
Calla, welcome.
Thank you.
I'm going to ask about what you're pouring in just a second. Alvaro Palacios is here representing himself and his wine. Do you like the idea of showcasing Spain and Portuguese wine here in Vancouver and in Canada?
It's been an amazing morning. Together with Portugal and especially Paul Wagner, who has been giving a very nice driving of the presentation with a lot of history. Amazing. Amazing way of tasting wine with this person.
Tell me about the wine that you have in front of you.
I have La Montesa, which is a vineyard that my father planted in the mid-80s in Rioja, in Alfaro, La Rioja. And now, since he passed away in the year 2000, I am making the wine, and I have all the responsibilities, but that's what I brought it, because it's like a big challenge for me.
What did you learn of your time at Chateau Pertus? What did you learn? Everything?
I don't know what I learned, but my passion was really on fire. I became crazy about great classic wine, about the concept of Grand Cru, Terroir, all the conception of greatness of high-end wines.
But you knew you were going to go back to Spain?
I knew it, absolutely. Yeah, of course. I've been in Spain. I have in three regions, and the three ones are in Spain.
Rierat, Rioja, and...
Ambierzo. Thank you. Sí.
You've been saying it so much, it's a given, right?
I see a term called the New Spain. Is the New Spain? Are you leading the New Spain?
Well, no, I don't know. I'm not leading, but I think I represent the generation of these circumstantial chains of Spain after the old days in the 20th century, a lot of isolated times. And then from the 80s, I belong to that generation. And well, maybe I am one of those, together with other not that young guys anymore.
Going back to the future, I seem to remember from this morning you said.
Yes, rescuing old vines.
Dana, you've been to New Zealand a number of times?
I've been there a couple times, yes. And it's funny because people say to me all the time, what's the favorite place you've ever been to travel? And I can never say my favorite place, but I always say, you know what? If you haven't been, you really have to go to New Zealand. I mean, the people, I mean, you've been there. You know what it's like, the vineyards, the sites. But then I'm in Spain much more often, once or twice a year. So, and every region has something different to offer. And New Zealand is the same way. But you guys, you're blessed, both. You know, all three of you, where you live and the work that you do.
What did you bring to pour, Calla?
So from Selene, I brought the Straits, which is our reserve Sauvignon Blanc. It's personally my favorite, so that's why I picked it off our table today. I have three amazing winemakers on at Selene, and as a lot of Kiwis say, they don't really like to make New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, and this is their style that they would prefer to make. By bringing this reserve, we pick from our top vineyards every vintage and then age on the lees for a couple months. So that's why I love it. It's a little bit more of that old world meets new world style for New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc.
And in choosing what wines to bring, did you bring Marlborough and Hawke's Bay?
I did. So my Sauvignon Blancs on the table are Marlborough, but I do have a Chardonnay and a Pinot Noir from Hawke's Bay and a sparkling wine from Hawke's Bay as well.
Does Hawke's Bay wants to be Chardonnay? Or does it want to be Syrah? What does it want to
both.
Be?
Both.
Both, I would think. Exactly. I mean, I think the Hawke's Bay wines are so stellar. And when our company, Selene, opened, they had no intention of really working with a lot of Marlborough wine. But to be a big competitor in the market, we needed that Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc. So we kind of went with that. But the Hawke's Bay wine, you can find some kind of Burgundian-style elements. You can find some Bordeaux-style elements, depending where you're growing and what area you're in. But, I mean, our Syrah, our Cab Franc, our Semillon, they're killer wines. things that I wish we saw more of in North America, to be honest with you.
I love your Kiwi accent.
She's got a great Kiwi accent.
Just ranging right from Denver, from Denver, Colorado over here.
Lots of vines up there.
And James as well. Listen, what's in front of you?
I brought with me the Stoney Latitude Sauvignon Blanc. It's a slightly different take on what we used to here in Canada, which is generally 100% stainless steel ferment, generally a regional blend from the three sub-appellations. This is a single appellation wine with about 20% ferment in large format and neutral cuves. So more about the texture rather than that intense aromatics.
And this wine is actually for the next issue of Taste magazine. I'm kind of their go-to Kiwi writer, so to speak, because they know I've been there. But that's wine is one of the ones I feature, and I really, really love that wine.
Thank you.
No, I was just wondering how long you're keeping it in the larger format. You can go a lot longer with this.
From our perspective, with this wine, it is really just for the fermentation.
Okay.
We do have another couple of tiers where we go up as high as 65%. And then that gets a little bit of the lees aging to give it that extra richness and texture as well. Yeah.
I wanted to ask Alvaro, did you bring Lermita?
No. Sorry. Lermita is very tiny production. Only one case arrived to Vancouver.
Okay.
We sell it in 100 countries, also in Spain. And
will we see more of it?
Maybe a little bit more. But Lermita is a vineyard in Priorat. And it is 1.5 hectare. That produce is Garnacha, mainly Garnacha. Garnacha is a grape that sometimes yields, sometimes they don't yield because the berry is setting, etc. So sometimes it's 800 bottles, sometimes it's 2,800 bottles. So depend of the vintage. But one case in Vancouver right now.
So who got the case? We got to track it down.
Is it possible to explain, Kella, how popular Cellini is in Asia?
From my perspective, from what I've heard, because I am only North America, Cellini is one of the top selling New Zealand wines in Asia currently.
Exactly.
And my boss's brother, I believe, controls most of that market, Simon. I see so many friends who go over and travel there and can't believe how many times they see Cellini placed on a menu, and I get screenshots all the time from different menus. So it has been our biggest market in so many respects.
Also, Jim Robertson, I made a note about Stoney. It's 25 years.
It is indeed. It is indeed.
What have we learned about?
Well, I think it's a truism. The more you learn about the terroir that you're working,
yeah,
the more you learn about wine, actually, the less you know.
You're not wrong.
There's always that another layer of knowledge to be unveiled and to experience. And I think that this is the absolute magic.
But more familiar you are with.
Yes.
At least.
I mean, people ask me when I travel, why is it that Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc has such a strong following globally? And my only response is that it's the place where the grape and the land fell in love with each other. Because you need that little bit of magic.
Exactly.
You need that little bit of magic to go with everything else.
And don't overthink it. Let it.
Exactly right. Yeah. Exactly right. Yeah. Yeah.
By the way, can I ask this question? I'm going to let you two wrap up, okay? It goes like this. Spain's place, New Zealand's place in the world of wine. Is it because of one grape? What is it that makes Spain's wine become world famous and become the go-to wine? What is it that it's doing?
Well, I think Spain, I have to say that the history of Spain is 2,000 or more than 2,000 years of history. But I don't know, it's also, Spain is the largest country in hectares of vineyard.
Largest production
the largest
of
production.
Yeah.
Very close to France. Sometimes, depending on the weather, France produces a little bit more. But Italy, France, and Spain, they are very close in capacity of hectares. And then, at the end, at least the sector, the professionals in the world, the wine importers, they know Spain has a weight, not in peso weight, in history.
Which is actually really interesting because you've got Spain with hundreds of years, and yet the wine that we're trying at the table is our 37th attempt at getting Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc right. And so we're the millennials of the winemaking fraternity. We have to challenge, we have to explore, we have to be brave because we got a lot of catching up to do.
The first time I looked at you, I thought, what a millennial.
Yeah.
But listen, if you're the millennial, then BC is what?
We're
like
toddlers.
Still in the womb.
We're toddlers.
I might
exactly.
still be in the womb.
Yeah.
At least Marlborough's not as entitled as millennials are these days.
No, but you know what? There's the true that the Kiwi can do and the fact that you guys work together, and I use that example all over the world in countries that really struggle to try to get their wines out there. It's because they really don't work together, and you're always stronger as a whole, and because you guys are off in the middle of nowhere, you've always had to work together, and that's it. So it's been very beneficial for you.
I've been obsessed with New Zealand since the first time I went there when I was 15, and I pretty much showed up Cellini on vacation and asked for a job, and that's how
that's
I got.
That's the way you do it.
So lucky to be with them.
That's how you do it.
I'd been in the industry before, but I knew I wanted a winery like Cellini in my portfolio, and Google, so I showed up there and did that.
Google Kala Bischoff, and you'll see a guy. Then you'll find her. Okay. She is representing Cellini Estates from New Zealand. James Robertson, who, of course, is the voice of Stoneleigh, but also New
the
Zealand.
Voice for New Zealand.
New Zealand winemaking, yes. Dana Van Mulligan and Sandra Ofield is with us, and we have the pleasure of having the star of Spanish wine, Alvaro Palacios, from his own wines and all of other regions. Thank you, all of you, for coming here and pouring for us.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you, Vancouver.
Thank you. This is Tasting Room Radio. We'll be right back. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by newdistrict.ca. Did you know you can buy wine online? newdistrict.ca is BC's premier online wine marketplace. It just takes a few clicks for authentic quality wine to show up at your door. For all the details, go to newdistrict.ca. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Club at Crush Pad. They always bring wine to the table. Visit OkanaganCrushPad.com to join and save 20% today. Hello, I'm Terry David Mulligan, and this is the final segment of our coverage of the 40th annual Vancouver International Wine Festival. But that's not true, because I am going to take my little field recorder and go out and walk amongst them and talk to the winemaker at La Crema.
Oh, great. Greg?
Who's here somewhere in the room?
Yes.
Oh, by the way, that disembodied voice, this is the one and only Randy Ullum, the head winemaker, the leader of Jackson Family Wines. I have Dana Van Mulligan. I have Sandra Ofield. I have Ray Signorello from Signorello, the proprietor, and still lives up in West Vancouver from time to time. And I have a gentleman, well, I'm just taking it on the face value of his card, that he actually works with and knows Charles Smith. I know he does. His name is Eugene Milinchuk, and he's from Toronto originally?
Yeah, from Toronto.
A master of wine?
Master of wine, yeah.
And yet you still chose to work with Charles Smith.
Yes, well, you choose to sell those great wines that are everyday wines that people love, and I think those are embodied here in what I brought today, which was Riesling. Love Riesling.
Did you do your due diligence on him? Did you check him out?
Background check?
I was told that he's an interesting fellow. I let my hair grow a bit longer, but not nearly long enough before I came to the festival for this.
You have Kung Fu Girl in front of you?
I do.
Very popular, obviously.
Yes.
What else are you pouring?
We're pouring the other four wines in the Modernist Project from Charles Smith. So we've got Velvet Devil Merlot, got Boom Boom Syrah, we have the Chateau Smith, Cabernet Sauvignon, and I'm forgetting Yves Chardonnay, New Oak Chardonnay from also Ancient Lakes in central Washington State.
Let me translate, because Sandra Ofield doesn't have headphones.
I know,
he's
sorry.
Pouring the Riesling.
And, and the Boom Boom, I got it.
Are you familiar with Charles Smith wine?
I am, and I think you really helped put Riesling on the map, and I think it's a West Coast thing, and I think it's no longer... I think it's a variety that more people should be doing. I know BC should be hanging its hat on it more.
Dana?
With Riesling?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean...
Yeah, you are a Riesling.
Yeah, I love... Well, gosh, yeah, that's where I started. I mean, I love all Riesling. I love it from Australia, from Germany, from California, Washington, British Columbia. I mean, look at what we've got here. Tantalus, the Cedar Creek, the Block 3.
Yep.
I mean, there's some amazing, really amazing Rieslings.
Okay. I saw a comment that went by that one of the chain restaurants, their pouring of rosé went up 700% from last year.
I can imagine that.
What, you have a rosé in front of you? What is it?
Yeah, I do. You know, we're part of that curve now. It's the Kendall Jackson Vintners Reserve Rosé. We did a little test market last year in California and parts of America, and it went off quite well. So we're going national and international. This is going to be here in Vancouver in about 10 days or so. But rosé is on fire. It's like growing logarithmic right now.
What are the misconceptions about rosé?
Well, I think that the deal is...
That it's seasonal?
Well, yeah, that's one. It's actually not seasonal anymore. It's a year-round wine. But one of the misconceptions is people are thinking, they think, oh, rosé, and they go back 25, 35 years ago to what the white Zin, sweet white Zin days.
Yeah.
But these rosés now are very elegant. They're dry. They're fresh. They're great wines for any day of the week, but summertime on the porch, you're going to have some fun.
Variety of foods.
Everything. Yeah, they, you know, they got nice acid. And so this is about 75% Pinot. The balance is Syrah and a little kiss of Grenache for good luck. In color?
For us, it's always been popular up here for the last few years. But, I mean, you are living in that shadow of what you built a few decades ago with White Zin, right? And it seems to me like it would be harder to undo that where you're at than...
I kind of disagree a little bit with that, just because, you know, we've gone from, you know, those White Zin days, they came and they kind of went to a good, great degree. And then you've had the French... And the Europeans coming in with their Rhone rosés, and they're sort of taking over. And then we're looking at that and how that's been growing in the restaurants and in the stores, and thinking, well, wait a minute, we can do that too. And so now it's just going like gangbusters. It's kind of like backgammon. It's going to double every couple of years and then hit its maturity.
Plus, it's a whole new generation, right?
That comes with a screw cap. And every bottle comes, it's for free.
With its own screw cap.
No extra charge.
Screw top.
Your taste of end.
Way to go, velvet tongue. I have at the table Ray Signorello, the proprietor of Signorello Estates on Silverado Trail, Napa Valley. Great friend of the show, Randy Ullum, the chief winemaster at Kendall Jackson and Jackson Family Wines. Eugene Melinchek, who is a master wine, and he's representing Charles Smith Wines at the 40th Annual Vancouver International Wine Festival. I would fall over backwards if there were a rosé from Signorello. You are Big Red.
Yeah, well, we've actually made a little rosé over the years, but mostly what we do is Cabernet.
What'd you bring to pour?
We have our 14 Estate Cab. It's right off the ranch, right off the estate, right in front of the winery, and basically, we make about 2,000 cases a year, single vineyard Cabernet, typically blended with a little bit of Cab Franc and Merlot. Every year it's slightly different. And wine that you can drink young, or you can age it probably 20, 30 years.
All right, I know you're possibly very tired of answering this question, but you have a lot of friends here, and I know there's people in the audience would like to know what's left of the winery, and have you started regrowing already?
Well, I'm sure most of you have heard about the fires of California, Northern California, early October. And we unfortunately got hit pretty hard right at the beginning. But Sunday was a Sunday night, about 9:50, the fire started. And it was what we call the perfect storm for fires in that it was 50 mile an hour winds, 10% humidity. And we had one of the wettest springs in history in Napa Valley in Northern California. And that created a lot of growth that turned into very dry, almost hay-like stuff in early October. So all that kind of came together on that one day, and they call them red flag warning days. I got the notice about 3 p.m. I was actually, oddly enough, I was sitting in Vancouver. I was asleep.
Oh, man.
My wife, who had never been to the winery without me, was there that one weekend. Her first time ever being there with her girlfriends. And I got a call that night from her about 10:45. And she was frantic, saying there was a massive fire on the ridgeline behind us. And I was asleep. I woke up to, well, I don't think it's that big a deal. We've had fires before. You know, it looks, at night, everything looks kind of, you know, fires look bigger than they are. Well, obviously, it was a big deal. And she grabbed a few things out of the building, ran out the door. We have a residence there, or we did. And I phoned my winemaker, who brought our vineyard team up there to fight the fires for the first kind of like half hour to an hour, and we didn't have the equipment. We had a lot of water, but not the equipment to match it. So within about an hour, we had lost my residence, our offices, our lab, our hospitality center, up in smoke. I mean, the silver lining in all this is on our property, we have 30 to 40-year-old vines, and they're all intact. So we have the vines,
okay,
and we have the barrels of wine. So we actually have the product, just not the buildings.
For a lot of people, the vines actually created a fire break. It basically stopped the fires in a lot of situations. I mean, you guys weren't lucky, but having been in Napa last week, we had a lot of conversations. Mike Thompson, the congressman, was there telling us, we're all open for business down here. Come visit us, come buy our wine. Don't be scared of that it's burnt down. That's not the case in most of the situations here.
Yeah, very true. What you saw first, in October and into November was a lot of press, which kind of showed the area as being like a bombed out zone, devastated, and that really wasn't the case. So there's a few wineries like us, very few that got hit hard, but most of what Napa is open for business. I mean, it's 99.9%.
Okay. And that's important for everybody to understand that, the hills are green again, spring is here, it doesn't look as bad as some of the pictures, and to support the North Coast, Napa and Sonoma, where everybody's still alive and still making wine. And are you okay with your barrels? Do you need help, any space or anything like that? Because we can
Luckily, we actually had some facilities on the property that made it through. So our crush pad and our barrel cellar made it through. So we didn't lose any product, and we're able to continue on the production side. We can't obviously host anybody there, and I moved all my team off-site. But essentially, the production continues. So
okay.
Randy, how's it affected you? And how actually is the local response these days?
Oh, well, the local response is beyond belief. I mean, it's sad to say for the reason. It's really brought everyone in the community together with overwhelming support and outreach and help. I've never seen anything like this before. Open arms, during the fires, people opening up their homes or businesses to serving, food and what have you. The wine center that we have, the Kendall Jackson Wine Center, was serving meals to anybody who wanted them that week, because there's so many people lost their homes. It's in the Santa Rosa area of Sonoma, one out of every 20 families lost their home, which is amazing. But the rebuild is on, the cleanup is on.
Rebuild North Bay is doing a lot.
Right. It's very, very, it's fast acting. And, again,
and they know they have to. They have to act quickly, from my understanding.
Exactly. Yeah, so it's in process.
I think I've run out of time. I think I have. Anything else? Any other comments? Eugene?
I think community is what this all means, getting together for wine in wine styles that are enjoyed by a lot of people. But I think it was awesome how everybody in the North Coast has come together in a tough situation to help everybody. So,
yeah,
great.
No, it's a sad event, but it's amazing to watch the community support and giving.
Okay.
Okay. It was you.
Sandra Ofield.
I just had one little quick thing to say about the fires, actually, real quick. I think the consumers are going to have to, they're going to have to start getting used to the fact that these things are going to be happening in our areas, and they're going to have to become not painting it with such a broad stroke. BC's had a fire, avoid BC. That's not going to work anymore. And Sonoma County's had a fire, avoid Sonoma County.
How about they could use your support?
I think they need to get informed on where the fires were at and where they're heading to, and make informed decisions. And that's what we're heading towards. So.
And the other thing that's important is that anybody worth their weight in wine and quality is not going to put a smoky wine
exactly.
in a bottle.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Don't worry about the press. Go with your heart.
Okay, Eugene.
For you, do I have a gig in broadcasting someday? Do you think?
Oh, as a matter of fact, you just started your gig, Eugene. Thank you so much, Eugene.
My pleasure.
Malene Chick, who's representing Charles Smith Wines. Say hello to Chuck.
Thank you. I will.
Randy Ullum from Jackson Family Wines, Ray Signorello from his own winery. And by the way, I'll leave this. I didn't ask her this comment, and I think, Danny, you'll like this. I was going to introduce Sandra by saying she is my co-host for the show and the host of Oldfield's Wanderings. But also, when asked what she's going to do next, said, I'll tell you three things I'm not going to do. I am not going to go into retirement.
I am not going to own another winery, and I am damn sure not going into politics. And we'll leave it at that.
She's the wine ambassador of BC.
She should be running a damn place, frankly.
Okay, kudos.
Thank you all. And I'll give you a list of thank yous in a minute. Thank you for doing this. I appreciate it.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Our pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. This has been Tasting Room Radio, the 40th annual Vancouver International Wine Festival. I want to thank Dana Van Mulligan, Sandra Oldfield, John DeVries, James Murphy on the board, Corey Wood, Gabe Reinhartz at Roundhouse Radio, and the human wrangler, Jan Hogendorn from Roundhouse Radio. And I want to thank the people who actually did the wrangling for us from Milk Creative Communications, Christine, Anna, Stacy, and Bailey. That's been the 40th annual Vancouver International Wine Festival. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. By the way, next week, Alex Chen and how he won the gold medal plate. Susanna Trilling, astonishing chef in Oaxaca, Mexico, and her book and the whole reason why she exists, Seasons of My Heart, which is her cooking school. We're talking about traditional Mexican cooking and mezcal and other good things. That's next week on Tasting Room Radio. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by the club at Crush Pad. They always bring wine to the table. Visit OkanaganCrushPad.com to join and save 20% today.